You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency, the PUTcast. PUT is a not-for-profit industry watchdog organization dedicated to exposing the truth about the shady, abusive practices of pharmacy benefit managers and how they affect American patients, healthcare providers, and taxpayers. On the PUTcast, we'll talk to pharmacy industry experts, influencers, and patients, always with the goal of bringing the truth, transparency, and solutions to America's prescription drug affordability crisis.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the PUTcast. This is Monique Whitney. I am the executive director of PUT. I am thrilled to have you all join us today. And I'd like to welcome our panelists, PUT President Scott Newman. Scott.
Hello.
Jeremy Counts, or as we call him around here, Lord Dr. Jeremy. Jeremy, welcome.
Hey, good to see you guys.
Glad you're here. And then we have a very special guest today. Some of you already know this gentleman, the doctor of comedy. I'd like to welcome to the PUTcast, Dr. Maurice Shaw. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be on this podcast. I know a lot of times I share your guys' Twitter posts because I like them a lot. And so now to be on the podcast, it just brings everything full circle.
That's a good springboard for first question that I would like to get your opinion on. A lot of times our organization, and we refer to ourselves a lot of times as PUT Bulls. And the reason why we do that is because we tend to be a little bit edgy, a little bit less politically correct and call a spade a spade. And a lot of times we get pushed back from other organizations, individuals that aren't really comfortable, you know, saying what needs to be said, or sometimes going over the top a little bit. We can use that term, but I was going to say, do you see us being a little bit more edgy as an organization than the traditional organizations, or and what is your opinion on that?
Definitely. I can tell you this story personally. When I first, I'll back up. I myself have been trying to educate myself more on PBM, especially working retail, because you don't really see the billing side. And with the Pharmacy Podcast Network, I think you guys have been on some on the PBM reform. I think he has like 17 podcasts, but I know you guys have been on there, and I've been trying to slowly listen to them and take notes so I could educate myself. And I was like, man, this is just so complicated. You know, it shouldn't be this hard to try to understand PBMs, you know? And so to me, I was like, I think, you know, when you ask pharmacists, what are the biggest issues facing the profession, you're going to get like four or five different answers. Some are going to say understaffing. Some are going to say PBM. Some are going to say pharmacy schools and whatever. But to me, I've always said, you know, we need PBM reform, because that to me directly leads to a lot of the understaffing, especially like Walgreens or whatever, because they're, you know, getting abused with the reimbursement. So first, if we fix the PBM part, then we get rid of one of the excuses for why they understaff, which is the terrible reimbursement. So I was like, what could I do to raise money to help with the PBM reform? So I actually reached out to different organizations because I didn't know where to give the money. And they started listening different places, and the common denominator I got, they're like, well, there's PUT, but a lot of people like what they do, but not how they do it. So it's kind of funny that you said that. And I was like, well, that's what people tell me about my channel. So I'm going to make shirts to help support PUT, because I kind of,
yeah, yeah.
Because that's how,
well, you know, kind of.
Thank you.
Yeah, and then that's kind of how I stumbled upon one of the conversations, and I'm like, yeah, you know, we're not very well funded, but we're well organized when it comes to our message, I think. And this is what blows my mind. It, you know, at Walgreens, I can see an excuse for being understaffed there. They're not a PBM. You know, they're functionally, you know, hands are tied just like the rest of us. But what's the deal with CVS? Why does CVS have that same issue? And the only thing I can come up with is something that comes back to the reason why Walgreens and the rest of us are struggling with staffing, and that's greed.
Yep, I totally agree.
Why would CVS not staff their own staff when they're the ones taking all the money?
Yep, that doesn't make any sense. And I remember about a month after I started working for CVS, I worked for them for about 4 months. But literally one day, it was me and one tech from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And in order for him to even fill, I had to do out window, I had to do drive through, I had to give all the shots. And he took like 6 15-minute mental breaks because he was just like so overworked. And then the next day I asked the pharmacy man, I said, why is it so bad here? Like, CVS is the PBM. Why do they understaff? This is almost worse than Walgreens. And at least with Walgreens, I could understand it. Here, there is no reason for this place to be this busy. And that's kind of what changed my focus to kind of just always, I used to always just attack all the chains for understaffing, and actually seeing it and working at CVS and seeing how it was probably the worst out of all the places I worked, it really got me to change my focus to PBM reform.
Yeah. So I guess there is a component to the CVS deal, which is that, you know, even though they may have completely led the industry in, you know, tanking reimbursements because of the anti-competitive side of things, you know, if you underpay all of your competitors, or if you write contracts that force them to use your pharmacy, you pretty much can do what you want to. But you know, there are a couple other PBMs, not many. So, you know, once you start an industry standard, you know, the rest of them follow suit. So next thing you know, CVS pharmacies are probably being crappy reimbursed by Optum and Express Scripts too. So I'm sure there's a component to that too.
Yeah, I think also is they'll use those metrics and they'll use their pay and they will say, well, you know, according to this, you know, this should be the average cost of dispense when really it's much higher. Because if they're able to, you know, cut it down as much as they can, especially with the more prescriptions you do, the less the cost of dispense is. So if they're doing a huge number and they're still understaffing their pharmacy, they can still use that as an excuse to underpay all of us. So I think that also goes into kind of their calculations and yet another level of anti-competitive behavior that is used to manipulate the market as a whole.
You know, it's a direct effect. I used to call it kind of indirect because you guys are right. Like when you work retail, you never saw the payment side. I mean, I worked for Rite Aid for 16 years, and the first 1 or 2 years that I worked for them, I could see the purchase side. Well, they took that away, and you could no longer see the purchase side. All we saw was claim went through, paid or not. We had no idea. So a majority of retail pharmacists have no idea that the reason for their crappy working conditions is this middleman that takes, you know, 50%+ out of the list price of a drug for themselves. And that, you know, it really, I know that pharmacy schools have something to do with the market saturation because the growth isn't there anymore. But why is that? Why are we struggling to find places to work? Why is the number of places that we have as options to apply for work, why is that crunching down while prescription volumes are going up significantly still? And there's only one answer, and that's because the PBMs have literally are destroying, if not already destroyed, you know, this side of our profession.
One time I had a customer, he had about 8 prescriptions, and he goes, with all my prescriptions, I'm keeping you in business. And I was like, well, we probably lost money on all those scripts. You're actually probably putting us out of business. And it's like,
a brand name, I just assume I'm going to lose money on it. I ran my numbers today. Out of the last $50,000 worth of brand name medications that I ran, I made $1,000. And that is before you take into account labor, pills, and everything. I use the average cost of dispense at like $12. And after putting that in there, I ended up losing, it was $350 after cost of dispense was actually factored in. So we're losing money on these brand name medications that are tying up almost all of our cash flow. And this would not work, and it doesn't work in any other industry. It wouldn't be allowed in any other industry. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I think what also helped open my eyes is my channel and page grew. I had other people add me on Facebook that were independent pharmacy owners, and you know, they'll constantly post screenshots of, you know, this is the reimbursement, this is what I got paid, this is negative, this, you know, so that really opened up my eyes to actually be able to see the screenshots of you know, how much money they're actually losing as independent pharmacy. And I think I remember like one of the podcasts, they were talking about how independent pharmacies, now they sell so much stuff up front just to try to bring in additional streams of revenue. It's like all the knickknacks and all the other stuff you see up front is just kind of eye opening. And I think a lot of people, especially on my page, they complain so much about the understaffing, but I would think a good portion of them don't even realize how terrible the understaffing. They kind of know of it, but they really don't correlate PBMs with understaffing. They just see like, oh, the CEO got this amount of $1 million. So they've got money. So they're being cheap, which is probably part of it. But it's also, you know, like we said for Walgreens, that terrible reimbursement. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. And pharmacy is a small voice as it is. And so many people are scared to even talk. Cause I'll post something, they're like, oh, I love your post. I would like it, but I don't want to get fired. I'm like, we have people who are professionals who are scared to just even like a post because they think they're going to get fired. And I was like, we all need to be unified because our voice is even smaller because people don't even want to speak up. So we need to be more cognizant of what the main issue that we need to attack first. And to me, that would be like PBM, then provider status, then understaffing, and then, you know, we could trickle on down to schools, but it's kind of so hard to unify everybody. But that's kind of what I'm really trying to work on, is just to bring to light more about the PBM. So maybe we could be a little bit more unified, and that way our voice would be a little bit stronger.
I have a question
for sure
about that. You are not just a pharmacist, you're also a comedian. That's a wonderful talent that so many of us, you know, rely on in times of stress, because, you know, as they say, laughter is the best medicine. I'm curious about how you got started in that, and with the kind of comedy you do, you know, what you see happening with your audiences. Like, do you think that they get a better picture? Does your comedy help educate them? I'd just love to know from your view a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because when you're at a comedy club, most of the people don't have any idea about pharmacy. And so when I'm on stage, I have to write my jokes to in a way that they'll be able to get it. Because if I was in a room full of pharmacists, I could just talk about anything and they would get it. But it's really difficult when you have people who don't understand it. So I always spend so much time writing and trying to simplify things so that people will get it. And then usually what I focus on is how people try to always rush us, and it's supposed to be done in 15 minutes. And, you know, I do a joke where a lady's like, why does it take you 15 minutes to take pills from a big bottle and stick it in a little bottle? And then at the end, when she has questions, I'm like, I don't even know what that medicine is. I just took some pills from that big bottle and stuck it in that little bottle. So people always clap and laugh. And then afterwards they come up to me. It's like, oh my gosh, I always rush my pharmacist. I'm not going to do that anymore. You know, I didn't realize like how much stuff you guys have to do. So I think the general public,
that's an excellent point.
But the one thing that I've noticed is that it's like the Laugh Factory holds like 400 something people, and Zany's will hold like 300 people. And what happens is a lot of people will start to follow my YouTube channel. And when I post these videos that are like serious pharmacy issues, that I assume that most of the people who are following me are pharmacists, but I'm finding that's not the case, because people will comment and say, because I've watched your channel, I'm so much nicer to my pharmacist. I didn't realize this was going on. I'm going to start speaking up more. And so like, since people go to follow me on my YouTube channel, they see all the videos and everything that's going on in the profession. And I feel like that's kind of where the biggest impact, because I look at a lot of the comments and I was surprised how many of the comments on my YouTube videos are from people who aren't in pharmacy.
That's amazing.
That is really interesting.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad that you say that because, you know, I am not a pharmacist. People who listen to the podcast have often heard me say that I'm not a pharmacist, but I am a patient. And the issues affect patients as much as they affect pharmacists. But when we look at, you know, what it takes to educate somebody, you started off this show by talking about how you were trying to educate yourself. And now here you are and you take your comedy and you help educate other people. I'm curious, when you meet up with other pharmacists, what their reactions are to your jokes and to some of the things that you do, you know, like do they find, you know, relief in what you're saying? Do they suggest jokes to you? I'm kind of curious about what they think.
Pharmacists, they will rush out of the comedy club to just find me and just say, oh my gosh, every aspect of that I could relate to. I loved it so much. And you know, that was hilarious. I was laughing. Or especially people who have family members that are pharmacists, they say, oh, my dad's a pharmacist or my husband's a pharmacist. He would have loved you. I wish he would have could have come. We'll have him follow you. And those people, they just truly love it. Especially, like I said, because they can relate to every aspect. I think some people after the show, they go, are you really a pharmacist? They don't really believe me. And then some people ask me, is it really that bad? Because they don't think that it could be that bad. So like, they don't know if I'm up there just joking or if I'm serious. And that's kind of what I, you know, tell them, like, yeah, it's pretty bad. And then, so it's an educational moment. And then the kind of the sad thing is, like, you could go through probably all my videos and there's probably at least, I could probably think of at least maybe 200 to 300 comments of so many people saying, like, I'm so stressed and depressed working retail. Your videos literally got me through retail. I come home and cry and watch your videos and cheer up. And that's kind of the main reason why I kept making them, because people don't realize it. Like, make another video. But I was like, you have to write it out. I have to do the editing, the lighting, you know, it takes a lot of time to even do like a 5-minute video when you're changing the background. And one person commented, like, who let this dimwit in their pharmacy? I'm like, it's not even a real pharmacy. It's a green screen.
Yeah.
So many people, it says that.
Or changing a wig.
Yeah, that even takes time. Even where all the, my mom came over and she's like, why do you have so many wigs in your house? And I was like, they're for my skits. But it's like so many people, and even my emails is even more than the comments. It's just people just messaging me just to say thank you. Like, it took time of their day to say thank you, to say that my videos helped them get through retail and when they have stressful days and keep making them. So that's a lot of times why I keep making them, because it helps people out a lot. And people also tell me they think that they're alone. Like, they're like, oh gosh, I'm so depressed, or I'm going through anxiety, or I had to go to the ER because, you know, retail is so bad. And then when I post a video, they go, oh my gosh, I'm not the only person who feels this way. And so I think that really helps to let other people know that they're not alone.
Yeah. Awareness of what's going on is really important. And getting that out there, I mean, not even with PBMs, I mean, the workplace conditions, everything else, everything that you were doing. Do you think that's why that upset them so much? Is they, to meet what their shareholders want, they've got to show growth every year. And if you can't control reimbursements, then you got to cut staff and you have to make working conditions awful in a lot of ways. That's the only thing that they can control. So that kind of ties back to PBMs. Well, definitely ties back to PBMs, but with those work conditions and you raising awareness of it, is that the main point? Like, was that where all the blowback came, was mostly working conditions?
Yeah, it was mainly working conditions, at least for me in the beginning, because like I said, I didn't really know a whole lot about PBMs, or I knew about PBMs, but I didn't think about it because I never saw the pricing. And so like just understaffing, that's what I was just, I beat that drum to like 110%. And it wasn't until recently, as I started to kind of educate myself more, that I recently started talking about PBMs. But yeah, before I was just all about the understaffing. And I actually, towards the end, I did go to one meeting and, you know, they were just talking about how poor reimbursements and stuff like that. So I kind of got an understanding, but like I said, it wasn't until last couple of months that I really started to focus. And that's a lot of people just reaching out to me, me becoming more friends with independent pharmacy owners. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, directed me to put, they'll text me like, hey, follow this group or post this or post that. And that's where I really started to follow you guys, is my independent pharmacy owner friends just really sharing your stuff. So then I share it too.
Let's visit an interesting topic that probably doesn't. I listen to pretty much everything too, and I don't know that I've ever heard anybody who you've been on with talk about the origins of how, you know, rare it is that there is a funny pharmacist that actually has a side career doing so. Were you a funny child? I mean, did you always like the silliness involved and making people laugh? And, you know, were you hell on your parents? And how in the world, you know, obviously most people who have a little bit of talent in comedy don't wake up and say, you know what, I really like comedy, but I'm going to go to pharmacy school for 8 years.
Yeah, well, comedy, I was always like a class clown, and I actually got a lot of spankings because I would have like A's and B's, but I would not make honor roll because I would get a check mark for my behavior. And so
I understand you.
Yes, same.
My dad was like, you didn't make honor roll because you want to be funny, huh? So you know, I've always been told that I was funny. I remember my first year of pharmacy school, the dean, she wore bright red lipstick and she had this long hair, and she always kind of reminded me of like Madea. So like we had this one assembly, and I was like, you know what, I should imitate her. So I wore bright red lipstick and I wore a wig and I wore a dress, and I said, either they're going to love this or I'm about to get kicked out of pharmacy school. I went on stage and I talked just like her and do her mannerism, and she's very well spoken, but she takes the long route to get to the point. And I went off on this tangent, and I was like, only to say school's closed tomorrow, and everybody started laughing, and she came up there with no expression. I'm like, uh-oh, she's not even laughing. And then she was like, that's the best impression anyone's ever done of me. You should be a comedian. So I was like, you know what, let me just try this. So they had an open mic night, and I just went to this comedy club, and it's actually really supportive. I think anybody who feels like they want to do comedy, even if they don't pursue it, just the open mics, because the other comics are supportive. Like, even if you're not funny, they clap and kind of laugh and say good job and encourage each other. So I really like that. And that's, I was cool. Telling jokes, and then actually somebody booked me for a show, and this other guy, he was actually a writer for the Tribune, Mel Novitz, and I was actually studying for an exam, and he's like, what are you going over your jokes? And I was like, no, I got an exam tomorrow, so these are my note cards, and I'm trying to memorize these mechanisms of action. And he's like, well, I've seen you perform before, but you don't talk about it. He's like, well, why don't you just talk about pharmacy? That's way more interesting than you talk about being drunk or doing whatever. So at first I didn't think anybody wanted to hear anything about pharmacy, but I just kept trying at it. And it took a while. People don't realize, like, even to work on a joke, you have to go to an open mic, and like sign up is at like 5:30, and it doesn't start till 8:00, but there's so many comics in the city. If you don't get there early, you're like last on the list, and you're like at an open mic till 1:00 a.m. So I would like literally ditch pharmacy school, drive, sit in traffic for an hour and a half, sign up for an open mic at one bar, and then drive to another bar and sign up, and literally go from bar to bar every night just to try to work on a joke. 'Cause you only get 2 minutes. So if a joke doesn't hit, sometimes it's not that the premise isn't funny, it's like you didn't word it right. So then you're just like switching it around and trying again. So it took a while, but I noticed that like a lot of clubs start booking me because my material was different. They're like, we get a lot of people who talk about being drunk or sex or drugs, but we don't have a lot of people talk about pharmacy. So I kind of stuck with it and kind of glad I did. And I actually ended up, it's funny, I ended up leaving Chicago and moving to Springfield, and there wasn't a lot of comedy clubs. I was like, man, how could I do comedy? So I actually started a YouTube channel. And once I started doing that, that actually kind of blew me up. And all the clubs that I tried to get in Chicago were like, hey, we want you to perform. So when I was in Chicago, they didn't let me perform. But when I moved 2.5 hours away, then they want me every other weekend. So now I'm driving.
Isn't that some shit?
Yeah, now I'm driving 3 hours every other weekend to perform. But when I was in the city,
I can't even imagine. Can't even imagine how hard it is to write jokes about pharmacy. It's already a big black box of nobody understands it other than us. And then you're going to try to make people laugh about something that we all might find amusing. I just can't even imagine how hard it is to write a joke that not only needs to take out all of the complication and the explanation in 2 minutes and then still be funny, you know?
Oh, yeah. And it's, I think, Scott, what he's trying to say is, did you find a way to channel all of our frustration and pain? Is that how you're able to do it so well?
Yeah, it actually, like I tell people, like, you know, once I started to focus on comedy a lot more, it made retail not so bad, because I had something else to look forward to. It's like, okay, I just got to get through this hell week. And on Friday and Saturday, I'm doing two shows back to back, and it's going to be fun. So it really helped me out a lot. Just I think a lot of pharmacists, they just get so, it's just pharmacy and nothing else. And that's why they get worn out, because they have no other outlets besides retail pharmacy.
What does your dad think going from, oh, you think you're funny, to now you're booking shows and performing on weekends? What does he think?
Yeah, Dad, I am funny.
My dad, he ended up having a kidney transplant, couldn't work, but now he works from home and does like Amazon business and eBay. But he, you know, with him having a kidney transplant, he would always go to the pharmacy a lot to get his medicines. And every year he's got it first at CVS, then he's got to go to Walgreens, he's got to go someplace else. And he's like, every pharmacist I know knows who you are. And he's like, this other pharmacist said, call him. And he's like, I talked to this pharmacist and they know you. So he's always like, you got to do more. You got to do more. You know, he really wants me to like really, you know, I am putting a lot of effort, but like, you know, with two kids and work and other stuff, it's just like, you know, I can only put in so much time. And he's like, you got to do this and that. So he's very supportive and wants me to do more. And he's always like, you're right there to doing something really big. So it's kind of awesome just to have that support. And he's always trying to help me. And he gives me these jokes, and then I Google the punchline. Of course, it pops up. And I'm like, you can't be having me on stage doing jokes you found off of Yahoo.
Oh, that's great, though. It's funny how parents, you know, like when you're a kid, they just want the best for you. You know, they just like really want you to grow up and have a meaningful trade. And as you've been, you know, talking with us today, I've been thinking about how you really are that. You've had it in both worlds, right? You had this wonderful success as a comedian and you've got your quote unquote day job, which as it turns out also provides material. So it's pretty cool. So it does sound like it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I used to always think that pharmacy was making me a better comedian, but I think comedy made me a better pharmacist, because there's so many times where my staff is just so stressed out. And you know, I remember one time my technician, she wasn't mad at me. She was just mad that, you know, the store that I did, we did like almost 800 scripts. Our flu shot goal was 1800. We only had enough hours for three techs, but the out window alone had three registers, which never ended. The drive-through never ended, and one tech fill-in, and there's nobody to answer phones and nobody to work on insurance issues. So when patients show up, there's an insurance issue to fix. So when I come in, she's just like letting me have it, you know, just about the understaffing. And I was like, well, tell me how you really feel. And then everybody started laughing. And she's like, look, I don't mean to be mad at you, but I was like, I get it. We don't have the hours, but maybe if I find people who are willing to work, that don't want to work 8 hours, I can get two people to work 4 hours and this will balance things out. Or if a customer was upset, I would just joke with them and then they'll stop being so upset. So it really, my customer service scores were always through the roof, and people always love me just because I was joking. So it really just made me like a better manager and a better pharmacist, because I was able to take a situation or an environment that was so stressful and make it less stressful.
Isn't it amazing in our work environments there that the one person who has the negative attitude and there's nothing that they do other than be negative ruins the entire day, but yet you can come in with a little bit of humor and try not to take it so seriously under the stress, and that can completely make a difference in the whole day.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it was always in an awkward position because technicians reach out to me like, hey, I want to transfer to your store, but you never want to leave another store short. And they're like, my pharmacy manager, he or she is just going crazy and they're yelling and everybody's so stressed. I hear it's not stressful at your store. And I was like, I'm stressed. I just don't, I make sure everybody else doesn't feel stressed.
But you bear that burden on your shoulders and have a little bit, I guess we'll call it emotional intelligence to suppress it and, you know, go home and drink.
Yeah. I'm a big, it is what it is. That's like my number one phrase. It is what it is. And I just kind of move on with things.
I've got a question that I was wondering, like me, if I were to ever try anything like comedy, it would not end up well. I'd go up and I'd make some terrible joke about like, it puts the ta-da into dollar fill. And then I get crickets and a heckler would happen. And I'd be like, yeah, well, I'll kill your mother. And then that would just go off the rails. And they'd be like, oh, dude threatened to kill somebody's mother. My question is, of course, I would never do that actually in my pharmacy if I had a problem patient. My question is, do you treat hecklers and problem patients the same, different? Why? How?
Hecklers are, it's kind of funny what hecklers, it kind of just depends on what they're saying. Sometimes, you know, when you do pharmacy jokes, somebody may yell out, I love Xanax. And I'll be like, I bet you do. You look like it. And then people will start laughing or, you know, they'll just, sometimes people are just so drunk, they're not even like talking to you. They're just talking to whoever's at the table. So it's just, you always have to kind of just, be on your feet with that. And it really, like, the key is not to get rattled, because sometimes there's hecklers, and I've seen other comics, it just throws them off. And that's the kind of same at work. Like, you get that one, and sometimes you'll have like pharmacists or technicians, they get that one customer that screams at them and then they're done for the day. They're just like, you could tell it like affected their whole mood. You can see that sometimes they're shaking with me when people yell at me. It doesn't really bother me. And I know, especially like towards the end when I was working at Walgreens, like I was in a rich area. So, you know, those people scream and yell and everybody at my store was like, oh my God, I'm so scared of Karen or so-and-so. But I was like, you know, when I was in Chicago, I used to work on the West Side, and those people, you know, they got gold grills, braids, and they're saying that they're going to kill you. And I was like, well, that kind of prepared me for working in the rich area, because I know that these people can't kill me. Like, those people actually could probably kill me if they wanted to. So, like, you know, listening to Karen complain about X, Y, and Z, I was like, oh, this is nothing. I've had way worse. So it's just, you know, it's just about not being rattled. Because I think once they see that you're rattled and nervous, it allows them to yell at you more. But if you're just talking to them and it's not phasing you, it forces them to kind of calm down, just like a dog that's running at you and is rah, 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 and then you don't move, then that dog goes from aggressive to less aggressive because it sees that you're not scared. So that's kind of how I relate both of those situations.
Oh, I understand. I'm from the deep hills of Southwest Virginia. So I've watched like someone jacked up on meth jump on someone's car and bust the windshield with their fist. I'm thinking I've got to actually like draw my gun and do something about it. And then it all calms down. And then I move to a much better area where, you know, people are a little more affluent, you know, everyone's educated. And it's funny whenever someone comes in, they think that if they get a little rough with me, I'm going to cave. It's just like, you have no clue what I'm saying.
Yeah, I have a customer come in, and we did 400 or 500 a day in this store. And, he, you know, this one in particular just reminded me of the entire situation. And that's, you know, how long is that going to take? And, you know, I could do it about 15 minutes. Well, you know, 15 minutes is, why does it take so long? I've got places to go. And I'm like, man, you don't have any place to go. You don't even have a job. And so I get it ready in 5 minutes. He comes and picks it up. He stared at me the entire time. And then 30 minutes later, I see him still out in the waiting area talking to all the people that have come up because they knew everybody anyway. So on the way out of the store, he took an hour having small talk with everybody that he knew on the way out the door.
Yeah, it's kind of funny you say that about the phone. I remember one time I had a customer who he was complaining about that I wouldn't fill a prescription. I was like, it's controlled. Like promethazine with codeine was huge where I was at. So I was like, well, I have to call the doctor. And he was complaining, like, man, I'll call corporate on you, but I don't have a phone and yada, yada, yada. I'm like, okay, sir. And then a few minutes later, he's like, man, can you at least let me make a phone call? So I'm thinking he needs to call for a ride. I'm like, sure. He's like, all right, now what's the number to corporate? I was like, you're not about to use my phone to call corporate. You get your own phone. I took the phone back, but it was just funny how he tried to use my own personal phone to call corporate.
Good Lord.
So do people become better patients after they've heard your comedy show and they hear some of these stories that you tell?
Oh, I don't, because I'm at work, a lot of people don't even know that I'm a comedian. There'll be like some customers who will find out that I do comedy because another pharmacist will come in and say, hey, I heard that you worked over here, or somebody saw me and say, hey, you were funny last night. But most of them have no clue. They just think I'm a pharmacist that's funny and that they like to come to. But most of them have no clue that I do comedy.
Well, then maybe we should find a way to help you elevate your profile, because just as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about every time in the past I was ever a bad customer, really anywhere. And just like at this moment, for anyone who might be listening, if I was ever a bad customer to you, I now feel compelled to say I'm really, really sorry. I remember as a patient being in CVS and watching these, you know, very, very, very busy pharmacy staffs. And then they'd have to, in addition to counseling, medication, and filling prescriptions, they'd have to stop and do checkout. You know, people would bring all the stuff they'd picked up in the front end of the stores. So they're, you know, checking out their makeup and their toilet paper and everything else. And I just always feel like what a terrible thing to make someone who's got this phenomenal education, whose job is actually to protect us from ourselves when it comes to taking care of our health. And now we've reduced them to the level of being a retail clerk at the same time.
Isn't it ironic that the front end always has somebody to like help out? Like, how do they have so many daggone hours? And why does McDonald's and Chick-fil-A have so many more people filling fries and burgers than we do filling, you know, blood pressure medicines and stuff that can actually kill you?
I don't think McDonald's has DIR fees, so they know exactly.
probably true. You know, they talk about how food margins are, you know, not that great, and drug margins, well, they're not that great either, but how in the world do they have so many freaking people?
Could you imagine, though, if McDonald's did have DIR fees, that would have been a non-starter. They would have been wiped out. You know,
well, they'd never get your order right.
Illegal in any other industry, and it should be illegal here. They're exploiting a loophole to charge us money. Like, this is ridiculous. Just taking advantage of.
I don't understand how they still can't get your food right. They got all them people back there.
Well, they should. It's automated, but I don't know. Maybe it's McDonald's you're going to, Scott.
Probably.
I went to McDonald's the other day to get my daughter. I was like, can I get a hamburger? And the lady's like, with or without cheese? I said, well, I would have ordered a cheeseburger then if I wanted the cheese.
Oh, Maurice, I was going to ask you, what do you see as a good way for us as a profession, as a whole, to kind of get the message out about everything going on? We can do comedy and we can do, you know, our own professional groups, and we can try to educate lawmakers and the public. What do you see as kind of the best way going forward to try to continue doing this? Because I feel like with things like you're doing, like comedy and just entertainment in general, if you're able to connect with people on that level, a lot of times it makes it a lot easier for them to, I guess, relate to us rather than, oh, I'm going into the pharmacy and there's the guy in the white coat behind the counter. And I try to be as approachable as possible, but it feels to me like entertainment and getting our message through that way would reach a lot more people. And I was just curious your ideas about all that.
Yeah, that's kind of been my focus, which whatever ways that we can reach people who aren't in the pharmacy. So to me, that's either, you know, like, for example, a couple news reporters that like will message me. There was actually one guy, he used to be a pharmacist, but he's a news reporter in Boston. And he's always asking questions. And it's just like, just trying to get out as much information to the general public, because I don't even think that they are aware. And it's just like, you know, the one thing that kind of gets frustrated, even the NBC Nightly News piece, Adele, she had messaged me like, hey, the piece came out, thanks for all your help, and directed me to different people. But it's like, even when I watched it, it was like the end, and it was like so quick. I went to the bathroom and came back. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's already over. So it's like, just got to find a way to really just let the public know. I know there were so many stories that people have reached out to me and we're going to do, but there's so much with either Black Lives Matter or Trump or this or that, and then pharmacy just gets pushed to the back burner. Like, part of me is just like, oh my gosh, there's probably at least 8 different stories about what's going on in pharmacy, but they always say that their story gets pushed back because it's not priority at the moment. So it's kind of like, I feel like we're kind of like victim of the times at the moment until things get better.
I agree with that.
Pharmacy is, you know, unless there's something happens where people can't get their medicine, I don't think they really too much care at this moment that we're understaffed, if they're still, since they're still getting their medicines anyway. So it's like, I really just feel like to try to keep doing what we're doing and try to use comedy and social media is just kind of like what's going on in the world just basically overshadows our issues. So hopefully here in the future, you know, all the stories that these reporters said they want to do, that they're going to get back to it. Hopefully that they're able to get back to it once we can move forward. And that's kind of the unfortunate.
I think the freight train is moving very quickly towards the whole, you know, staffing / you know, work conditions / someone is going to pay the ultimate price that we're all worried about. I think that there's going to be, you know, even maybe more than one or two times that it happens that, somebody is, you know, gets out that somebody has been harmed or even dies, God forbid, from a situation. And you know, traditionally boards of pharmacy go in when a medication error happens like that. And, you know, you being the licensed individual, they hold you responsible. But we are seeing, obviously, where boards of pharmacies are well aware of the working conditions and are starting to place at least some of that blame on the corporations, which is where it really should be placed.
True, but I mean, is anyone really going to care that much? In the end, like, I think one reason that they're slowly strangling us out is they want to condition everyone for a little while to get really shitty service, because this behavior never would have been tolerated a few years ago. It's ridiculous. Like, I grew up in a pharmacy. I watched the good times. Everyone, there wasn't understaffing. Everyone was staffed really well. Pharmacists were paid well. And you know what? People would pay out of pocket for brand name drugs. Everything's getting more expensive. No one's making money but the middlemen, and everyone's suffering for it. So I think they're just conditioning everyone to, you know, wait 2 days for any medication, and you're just going to continue to get shitty care, and people are going to die. All in the name of, you know, increasing it 10% every year for shareholders. So it's a race to the bottom right now. And they could strangle us out right now because we could get some people to pay attention, but are they going to care all that much? So it's really frustrating right now.
Well, one of the places we've been most successful with finding bill sponsors in the States is personal experiences. So, you know, it's going to happen enough to where it starts to happen to people's, you know, personal families that are in charge of making these decisions. And I think that, unfortunately, that's the case, but fortunately for us, that's the case, you know?
Yeah, I put a complaint to my board of pharmacy, and I was actually confused because they like got back to me like, I felt like almost a year later, about a complaint I had put in.
Oh, wow.
About understaffed. He's like, hey, I want to follow up with this email. And I was like, I feel like I sent that a long time ago. He's like, you did. But what I was told was that a lot of the complaints from the consumers that the board get are, the I guess the way they word it, it comes off more as a customer service issue. And they can't discipline a pharmacy for customer service issues. So if a customer says, I waited in line for 4 hours, that's just poor customer service. But if they would have put the complaint and said, I waited for 4 hours on Monday and Tuesday and I couldn't get my blood pressure medicine, I ended up in the hospital, then that's a patient safety issue, and that we need to be directing customers to, you know, to reach out to the board, but they have to put it in a way where it doesn't just come off like a customer service issue. You know, that was, that affected their health, even though when they put
that's important,
they just waited 4 hours, and they can't discipline pharmacies based off that.
This has been a really great conversation that has explored so many different angles of what's happening behind the pharmacy counter that patients don't necessarily know about, and that you are helping to, I would say, educate people. I think we would all agree you're educating people through your comedy, but also through the work that you do every day as a pharmacist working with your staff. And that's amazing. Thank you so much for everything that you do. And thank you for being on our podcast. One of the things that I like to do when ending a podcast is to ask our guest, you know, what they either see for the future, you know, as far as the profession goes, or, you know, advice that you may have. I would actually like to ask you both questions. So just starting with, for pharmacists who are, you know, in the profession now, dealing with the stresses and the things that we've been talking about, I'm curious, you know, what advice you have for them for helping to keep their stress in check and maybe make the experience a little bit better for them. And then I'd also love to get your perspective on what you see the future will be, you know, for pharmacists and for the industry, or even for yourself.
I think the problem with pharmacists is that with student loans, all of our source of income is just related around pharmacy. And since that's all of our income, nobody wants to speak up. But, you know, I had opened up a barber college because I wanted to be able to speak up more. And if something happened to my job, I wanted to know that I had other source of income. It didn't have to be the same amount, but at least I had some source. And I think if more pharmacists or pharmacy students come out with that mindset, like their pharmacists, you know, maybe working 32 hours a week or just 30, I think one would help your mental health, but two, allow you to focus on some other business or passion, whether it's real estate, t-shirt design, or whatever. And I think that more people going forward would be more willing to speak up and fight back if pharmacy wasn't their only main source of income. And the way the profession is going, you don't also want it to be your only source. So that's kind of the advice I give. And then for the future of pharmacy, I think the next 2-3 years is very important. If we can't get change now, I don't know when we will be able to get change after, you know, seeing COVID and everybody kind of seeing the importance pharmacists play. You know, some places when you tried to get your free cup of coffee, we weren't even considered, you know, heroes, and we're the ones giving all the right shots. And so it's like in my job where I work, I can kind of see, I get to see a lot of the bills that come through and the changes that are people trying to make, especially with PBM reform on a state level and trying to get more professional dispensing fees and hopefully getting provider status. So if we can get more PBM reform at a state level and work towards provider status and getting paid for some of our service, I think pharmacy has a bright future. I've had so many pharmacists reach out to me that are starting so many different companies. I think this has really caused a lot of pharmacists to become entrepreneurs, finding different ways to better the profession and to show our value without having to work for a big box chain. And so that's what I'm noticing a lot of pharmacy entrepreneurs. So if we can get change in the next you know, 2-3 years, then I think I see the profession turning around. But if it's just still the same old, even with COVID and all everything that's going on with the legislation, if we can't get changed with all of this, then I don't see it really ever changing.
Well said. Thank you so much. Scott, Jeremy, any last questions for our guests before we close today?
No, I just want to thank you for being here, and thank you for the advocacy work that you're doing. It's so important. Obviously, we often feel like we're, you know, trying to save the profession, you know, on an island. And so to have somebody join with the platform that you have in the advocacy fight, it's a real additive to the fight. And thank you again for picking us for the donations. We always use those. And tell everybody where they can order a t-shirt, I would say.
Yes, definitely. The shirt is on Teespring's website, but probably the easiest way, go to RX Comedy fan page. I constantly post it. It's the PBM t-shirt, Pharmacy's Biggest Mistake. Just find the link there. I also post a link in my videos with the shirt as well. And the proceeds will go to help support PUT. So since PUT's all about transparency, once I get everything, I'm just going to show what was made and posted and send it to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Maurice, it's been awesome talking with you, man. I love everything that you're doing. You ever need anything, I mean, I'm here for you, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah, good for any of us.
All of your stuff.
Yes, thank you so much. It's been such a joy. We are definitely going to have you back. And just thank you. Really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You bet. And for everybody who's listening, thank you for joining us today. If you like this episode, please let us know in the comments section. We love getting your feedback. For now, that ends this podcast, and we look forward to seeing you all the next time.